Guests appear on the Smile Center Hotline. Now, back to the Gabe Kuhn Show, presented by Oxbow. Oxbow, with special guest David Cobb from CBS Sports, live on 92.9 FM ESPN. With today's special guest host, Sparky Pfeiffer.
David Cobb joins us now. David, thanks for coming on, man. Appreciate it.
Hey, yeah, thanks for having me.
I have serious questions about your taste in life. I'm going through your Twitter account, Sour Patch Oreos, you put better than you might expect? What?
It was an upset. I went in with low expectations because, like you, I was skeptical of these Sour Patch
Oreos. I wasn't buying
them.
I saw them, and I was no way I was buying them.
Give them a shot. You'll be surprised. They make it work. I'm not saying they replace the normal Oreo in your snacking routine, but right. just give them a shot.
Because, like, okay, so, like, when I take a bite of this Oreo, am I going to have, like, this weird, sour-looking face every time I take a bite of the Oreo? Is it, like, that sour?
Well, no, they're really not that sour because, you know, with the Sour Patch Kids, they have that sugar coating on
right.
them. The Oreos don't have that loose, like, sugar coating on them. But they don't taste like chocolate either. That's what I was afraid of. I was like, are they going to try to incorporate chocolate into this candy? Because I don't think that would work. So it really doesn't even taste like an Oreo. It's like an Oreo that has a candy flavor to it and no chocolate.
All right, maybe. If they're on sale, maybe I'll try it. I'll get back to you and let you know what I think. I want to talk about a lot of stuff, because you do college football and college basketball, so we're going to kind of just jump all over the place. I first want to start off about this whole Dan Hurley thing at UConn, because I heard him say the other day that this was not a leverage play for him at UConn. That's not what this was. Okay, well, you can say that, but then when you follow up talking about how you wanted more pay for your staff and you wanted all these different things, it doesn't really make you look necessarily all that good. My belief is that I don't think he ever wanted to move necessarily to the West Coast. I don't know about his wife, because there's been some speculation that his wife didn't want to go either. I think if he comes to the NBA, it's for the Knicks, it's for the Nets, it's for Boston, something there on the East Coast. I cannot imagine seeing Hurley coaching a West Coast team with paparazzi and celebrities and all that stuff out there on the West Coast. He's just too much of a New York guy, East Coast guy, for me to believe that would ever happen.
Yeah, there were too many cooks in the kitchen out in L.A., I think, for Dan Hurley to really thrive out there. Everybody has an opinion on what the Lakers should do, including people who work for the Lakers who Dan Hurley would have to answer to. Jeannie Buss is an involved owner. Rob Pelinka in that front office have opinions. And then you got LeBron James on that team. And anybody who doesn't think that LeBron James and Anthony Davis, for that matter, are more important and more influential than the head coach, that's just, you're crazy. And so Dan Hurley at UConn, he gets to run the show the way he wants to run the show. And maybe he can wait and go to a better situation. The Lakers situation is not a great situation right now. They're struggling to tread water, even with two of the best players in the sport on their roster as of late. And then when LeBron retires, the picture gets real bleak. And I'm sure Dan Hurley, if he was going to take that job, would want to have a major say in the direction the franchise would go from a personnel standpoint moving forward. And maybe they would say, oh, yeah, you'll be in the room. You'll have influence. You'll have a voice in the discussion about who we draft and who we sign and who we trade for. But Dan Hurley isn't used to just having a voice in the discussion. Dan Hurley is used to running the show. And so I think ultimately, unless that offer was just going to be life-altering in terms of the financial aspect of it, I don't know that it was ever going to be something that Dan Hurley was going to do.
How does the Big East compete with Power 5 schools when it comes to college basketball, when we start talking about NIL money, and money coming in from TV deals and so forth? I think they're in a lot of trouble, and I don't care if it's UConn or whoever else it may be in the Big East. from a financial perspective, I think that's going to be a struggle. Now, Hurley, obviously, coaching national champions, you know, maybe, okay, at UConn, he is able to make that work. Once he's gone, I think then they end up in the same boat as the rest of them, where it's probably going to be a struggle from a financial standpoint, trying to keep up with these other schools like the Big Ten and the SEC that are getting all of this money.
Well, right now it's fine for the Big East schools. Where it's going to get tricky is in the years ahead when you bring in the revenue sharing piece of it. The advantage, though, that the Big East schools have, if you want to frame it that way, is, and I know UConn has football, but that's an independent football program that they are not going to invest in from a roster standpoint nearly to the degree that they're going to invest in the basketball roster. And then throughout the Big East, you don't have football payroll, so to speak, that you got to deal with. So yes, the media rights revenue is going to be far inferior to that of the Big Ten and the SEC and the other power conferences, but you at least get to direct those resources in a more condensed way to a 13-man basketball roster as opposed to having to worry about 85 scholarship football players. And so maybe that's the Big East saving grace in a way. I think they got a little bit of a raw deal in that house settlement with how much they're going to owe since that disbursement was decided based on your NCAA tournament units. But I don't think Dan Hurley would have stayed at UConn if he really thought he wasn't going to be able to compete for talent. And I think he's going to be able to do that because of how important basketball is at UConn. They're going to figure out a way to make it work. And maybe for those Big East schools, it's not so much about the revenue sharing as it is about the collective. And if they are able to continue operating a collective on the side, maybe they'll be able to supplement that revenue sharing cut in a way that continues to get the top talent there to UConn and throughout the Big East.
I want to talk about the news that came out yesterday about the Big 12, David Cobb, talking about the fact of possibly Allstate being a title sponsor of this thing, the Allstate 12 or whatever they come up with, and them getting somewhere in the area of $30 to $50 million, I think is what I saw yesterday, per year for this. And the reasoning I saw in the story that I read was because they wanted to close the gap on the Big Ten and the SEC, to which I say you're not thinking, because clearly if this happens, the Big Ten and the SEC are going to go do the same thing, and they're going to do it for a much larger amount of money than what the Big 12 is getting from their title sponsorship. Doesn't that just make sense of how this is all going to go?
Yeah, that is a logical progression. I think you nailed it there, because once you open that can of worms, then it's available to the Big Ten, available to the SEC as well. On the one hand, though, I do give the Big 12 commissioner, Brett Yormark, his flowers for being proactive, for thinking ahead, for coming in here and being a little bit of a bull in the china shop, because for so long, these conference commissioners have been stuffy academics who are more concerned about academic collaboration and optics and your university research tiers and all these other things that the university presidents cared about, when that's never had any relevance whatsoever to college athletics. These are athletic conferences, and Brett Yormark is trying to do everything he can to make the Big 12 competitive. So I think the Big 12 is in a much better position than the ACC is right now from a leadership standpoint, from a financial standpoint. So yeah, in the long run, what's happened here might just open the door for the Big Ten and the SEC to expand their lead in the financial realm. But as corny and as ridiculous as the All-State 12 sounds, I'm willing to give that conference's leadership some kudos there for opening up every possible avenue of revenue. Because let's be real, college sports is now professional sports. And in professional sports, you see sponsorships of everything. You see the jersey patches. You see it on the courts, which we're going to have now in college sports as well. And so this is kind of, in a way, the next logical outgrowth of that.
You know, the thing about this is I'm surprised that the pro sports haven't taken to this yet either. Like, why wouldn't you name the divisions and sell the division names, right? So instead of, you know, the AFC South, it's Verizon. We're in the Verizon division, or we're in the whatever division. Because clearly already we've seen that college, pros, everybody, nobody cares about what it used to be like, or nostalgia or anything of the sort. The way this is going, specifically in college sports, it's a whole new world, and everybody's just trying to make as much money as they possibly can. It's no different necessarily in pro sports. When you start getting to the point of having, ad patches on jerseys and stuff like that, that you've gone far away from what it used to be like, and everybody's out trying just to make a buck here. And I think if this works in college, you'll see it in the pros too.
Yeah, you know, in the SEC, we could have the Cracker Barrel division and the Waffle House division. There you go. it's a little ridiculous, but part of me wonders if the SEC and the Big Ten won't have too much pride to go that route. I know that for fans who have seen their hallowed stadiums renamed, look at Kentucky, for example. Not that Commonwealth Stadium in Lexington, Kentucky was ever among the most storied college football venues, but it is sort of something to snicker at for the other teams in the league when they go play at Kroger Field. Kroger Field, I mean, give me a break. At Tennessee, which is where I went to school, the Thompson Bowling Arena for basketball is now the Food City Center. I mean, give me a break. So part of me wonders if the SEC and the Big Ten won't be too prideful to rename their leagues. But the Big 12 never made any sense anyway. There's what now 16 teams in that conference for this season. So why are we calling it the Big 12 to begin with? So maybe it's easier for the Big 10 to make that transition. But the SEC is a tougher one to see because their branding is so it's just all over the place, and it just means more. And they have the SEC Network. There is no Big 12 Network. If there was, would they have to rename it the All-State Network? So there just might be a few more hurdles for the Big 10 and the SEC with that decision. But for the Big 12, I think it's kind of a no-brainer.
But think about it. How much money are they going to get? Look at where the Big Ten is between all the different TV networks, streaming devices. The SEC is in the exact same boat with all the exposure they get. The Big Ten, they're reaching the West Coast now with some of those West Coast teams being a part of the Big Ten. By the way, they're no longer 10 teams either yet. They're still the Big Ten. From that perspective, if you're getting 30 to 50 million in the Big 12, what are they going to get? Are they going to get 100, 150 million a year for a naming rights deal? More than that?
Yeah, potentially. I mean, it's massive. It's massive because you think about the reach of the Big Ten and the SEC with these new media rights deals that they've signed. You know, the Big Ten is in the neighborhood of $1 billion with a B for its media rights deal, and that's because those games are going to be on in the households of millions of college sports fans around the country, from coast to coast, quite literally now. And so, yeah, what would a naming rights deal for the league be worth for them? It would be astronomical, but then do they really need more money? Do the Big Ten and the SEC
always?
Yeah, they always do. But they've got the lead right now. I mean, they don't have to. Their back is not against the wall. I think part of this from the Big 12 is from this feeling of desperation. We want to be what the Big Ten and the SEC are, and I think you're going to see the Big Ten and the SEC kind of turn their nose up at what they're going to view as a little brother there in the Big 12, just trying so desperately to maintain relevance after losing Oklahoma and Texas and feeling like they got to go out and court corporate sponsors to essentially take over their league. Frankly, though, Sparky, I'm just glad that it's not going to be the Saudi oil conference. Like, at least Allstate's a domestic company with a decent reputation.
Not yet. But I'll tell you right now, it's going to happen. You're going to have these other insurance companies that are going to want to take over these other two. You are not going to allow your competitor to own the college football season without you yourself trying to get in bet. And God knows these insurance companies make more than enough money. Real quick, one last thing. I don't know how much you got into it with Gabe in the past. The college football playoff schedule that came out a few days back. Do you like the idea of having playoff games on New Year's Eve? I mean, they've got one. They've got three on New Year's Day, which is fine. The Peach Bowl, Rose Bowl, and Sugar Bowl. The Fiesta Bowl, though, is on New Year's Eve. wouldn't it make more sense to say have the Fiesta Bowl as the first game on New Year's Day and then have them just stacked one after another after another after another and make New Year's Day one more time really all about the big games in college football? Because with 100 different bowl games, I feel like New Year's Day has really lost its luster.
Yeah, I think the only reason they're not going to do them all on the same day is just because there's really only three viewership windows within a day. When you're talking about, all right, we can pretend like you can cram a college football game into a three-hour TV window. We all know that's ridiculous and you can't actually do it. So you need 4 hours, a four-hour window for these games. You'd have to start them at 11 Eastern in all likelihood to get them done by midnight on the East Coast. So to have one the night before on New Year's Eve, it gives them a better viewership calendar, so to speak. So I think that's probably why they have divided it up that way. But, you know, it's good that they've got the marquee matchups still on New Year's Eve and New Year's Day. Those, in the minds of many sports fans, are still 2 days that are reserved largely for college football. And so the playoff is going to have what might be its four biggest games on those 2 days. So I don't have a problem with that necessarily, but where they do run into trouble with this schedule is that for the first round games, they've got a couple that are going head to head with the NFL. And it's almost like they've punted on those because ESPN is sublicensing them to TNT to broadcast. If you're putting a college football game on TNT, you're punting on it. So I'm at least glad that those quarterfinal games on New Year's Eve and New Year's Day will, to a certain extent, have a greater portion of the spotlight.
How about the fact that the semifinals are on Thursday, January 9th and Friday, January 10th, and the national championship game isn't until January 20th?
Yeah, it drags out too long. We don't need a 5 week period to complete the college football playoff when it's only 12 teams. That's probably my biggest complaint is, you know, I cover college basketball too, man. And by January 20th, I don't care anymore. I mean, I'm all the way into college basketball. The NFL postseason is even winding down at that point. That's probably my biggest gripe with the playoff schedule is just how long they drag it out.
He is David Cobb. Follow him on Twitter at David W. Cobb. David W. Cobb on Twitter. Of course, covers college football, college basketball, writer over there at CBS Sports. David, thanks so much for coming on, man. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem. Thank you.
You betcha. Take care. There he is. Again, David Cobb, CBSSports.com. Just great stuff. Had Jeff Calkins yesterday. Today we have David Cobb. Coming up next, Ryan Horvath of BetMGM tonight. NBA Finals, possibly the last game of the NBA Finals coming up tonight. We'll see what kind of advice he has for us on that game. That's straight ahead here on the Gabe Kuhn Show. Steve Sparky Pfeiffer filling in, 92.9 FM, ESPN Memphis. And, you know, make sure to do it right. If your father has passed, I'm sorry to hear that. Maybe you are a father yourself now and you have kids and you can get spoiled by your children this weekend. And again, just have fun, man. Relax. Enjoy it. That's the best part. I always advise grilling out. I'm a big guy of big fan of grilling out burgers or pork chops or chicken or whatever the case may be. And doing it up right that way. So enjoy your Father's Day weekend for sure. Got to talk a little bit about the NBA Finals here. And a great piece by Ramona Shelburne on ESPN's website today that I want to kind of dive in here. And it goes into Jason Kidd and his past, whether it be as a player or as a coach. And if you think about kind of the guys he's played with, going all the way back to when Jason Kidd started, right? It was Jason Kidd, Jamal Mashburn, and Jimmy Jackson were the original, you know, could have been big three back in the day for the Dallas Mavericks, back when their careers all started coming out of college and chemistry-wise, whatever the case may be, it just never ended up working out. And that may be one of the bigger wastes of talents on a basketball team. But along the way, Kidd has played with some really good players, right? So he is with Dirk, and they win an NBA championship in 2011. He helps guide Giannis and get Giannis thinking about being point Giannis and introduces him to Kobe Bryant. John Stockton is at practice. Kevin Garnett comes to practices and is a part of that thing and really helps Giannis along his way. Plus, he was an assistant coach with LeBron, obviously, when they won the championship in the bubble in 2020. And Kidd said back in 2022, I'm talking about dealing with these superstar players, quote, "I'm not here to argue or fight with you. I'm here to help you, and I'm always going to tell you the truth." Because now, obviously, he has Luka. And that's pretty much what he told Luka when he met Luka kind of for the first time. In this piece, Ramona Shelburne says, in the three seasons Kidd has coached Doncic, Kidd has told him several truths. That he needed to stop making enemies of officials with persistent whining. That he needed to give a more consistent effort on defense. And that he needed to get in better shape to be at his best when his team needed him. Kidd has said these things publicly and privately. So Luka's teammates in Dallas and so have Doncic's teammates in Dallas and his teammates on Slovenia national team. So they're all telling him the same thing. Luka got in better shape to a degree. I don't think I'd call him in prime physical condition, Connor. I don't know if you agree with that or not, but I don't think I would consider him a peak physical athlete at this point of his career.
Don't think so.
No. So we have that. Defensively? No. He's just not there. Let me say this. Ja Morant can be an all-defensive player every year if he wants to be. Why? Because he has the athletic ability to stay in front of pretty much anybody. It's heart and desire, they always tell you on defense. Do you want it or don't you? But sometimes a player is limited athletically as far as how quickly can they move left to right, right? How quickly can they move their feet to stay in front of somebody? Sometimes players are just quicker than you. Athletically, they're just faster than you are. And there's not much you can do. You can try your best, but you're kind of going to be limited to a certain degree no matter how much you try. I think Luka is limited to a certain degree with what he can provide defensively. That does not mean that I think Luka gives full maximum effort on that side of the floor, because I don't believe he does. And game three was no different. So that obviously has not rung true or has made any inways into his brain to this point about the defensive side. We talked about the refereeing and the whining and the complaining. We talked about all of that yesterday on this very show. That hasn't stopped. For 3 years, they've been trying to tell him about all three of these things. And Luka is going to do what Luka does. Jason Kidd said yesterday, quote, "For great players, you have to fail to understand how to be successful at the highest stage. This is the highest level. The history is there for us to learn from. When you look at great players and their struggles, Michael Jordan, the struggles that he had against Detroit, Magic Johnson's struggles, LeBron's first time around, when they lost to the Mavericks and Kidd. Now, Luka is still 25 only. We got to keep reminding ourselves that Luka is not an old player. Yeah, he's been in the league for a while, for sure. But age-wise, he's still only 25. He's got at least 10 years left in the league. The thing that concerns me is, when you have a Hall of Fame player that played your position, and he's your head coach, and you still want to be stubborn, and you still don't want to listen, and you still want to do it your way and be who you are, regardless of what he says, regardless of what your teammates say, locally in Dallas, or internationally with the Slovenian team, no matter who tells you what, you're going to be you. And you're just going to laugh it off and apologize. Oh, I'm sorry about getting kicked out in game three. My bad. You're bad? No, that's not what you say. It's the NBA Finals. It's more than you're bad. He doesn't get it. And I think something needs to occur at some point to make him get it. And this is going to seem outlandish. And I understand. But you are down 3-0 to the Boston Celtics tonight. You are at home. Everybody has kept saying this phrase, gentlemen's sweep. And gentlemen's sweep just means that the losing team snags one on the way out here, and they lose the series 4-1. So maybe they get one in Dallas. So Boston then is able to win at home, and then they do a parade a couple days later and all that fun stuff. And I don't know if that's going to happen or not. But I think if I'm Jason Kidd right now at this point, I'm going to have a talking with Luka. Hey, man, we're down 3-0. No one's ever come back from 3-0. And I don't know if we will or not, but I'm going to tell you this right now. This is the biggest stage you've ever been on in your career to this point. If you do what you did in the last game and you leave your teammates high and dry running down the court and you're arguing with officials, you're being sat down on this bench and you will watch until I decide to put you back in the game. I'm done. This is 3 years. You don't want to listen. You're screwing your own teammates in the NBA Finals. Enough is enough. I'm done. So if you want to argue and do it your way, fine. I'm pulling you. I'm telling you right now, so it's not a surprise, you're going to sit down. Because at some point, you have to learn and figure out how to be a leader and how to be the guy that everybody wants to be more like and idolize. And right now, when you have your childish baby moments, you're not being that guy on this team. Would Luka be mad? Yep. I think what Jason Kidd would have to do before he did this and had that conversation, he'd have to talk to Mark Cuban and tell Mark, you must have my back. If I do this, you cannot side with Luka and get all up in arms that I sat Luka in the NBA Finals. Like, that can't be a thing. We have to be a united front. And if we're not going to be united front, then I will not do this, and we will watch him continue to do the same thing he's always done, and we're not going to be able to do much of anything because we're never going to be able to teach him a lesson at some point. And it's crazy that you're talking about teaching a superstar in the NBA a lesson. But as Ramona Shelburne points out, it's been 3 years. Nothing's changed. Nothing has changed. So what to do next? I think this is the time where you make your mark if you're Jason Kidd and the Dallas Mavericks and just make your point to him that you're done. You're not dealing with this anymore. It stops now. It stops here on the biggest stage. You want to do it your way? Fine. Then I will embarrass you and I will bench you. Connor, what say you?
I don't necessarily disagree. It's kind of what I was saying yesterday. It's the reason I don't agree with everybody that was freaking out about Luka fouling out was that most of his fouls came from he just wasn't putting in effort on the defensive end and he was just slapping the side of the guy. And the referee has to call that. But if Luka was in better shape, if he was playing better defense, those fouls wouldn't be present. I'm a big fan of Luka Doncic. I think he's one of the best players in the world. But there's no secret about he's out of shape. He is out of shape. He needs to be in better shape. He has to give a better effort on defense. And the hope is that failing in the NBA Finals like this, you know, even though he's putting up the numbers, it's not leading to winning basketball. Hopefully he is seeing that, okay, I can't just do it my way and just score offensively and try to run it at my pace. I have to be putting in effort defensively. I have to be putting in effort with my body because he's also a leader. He's going to be showing the rest of his team, hey, I'm in this fully with you. I'm going to come into camp. I'm going to be in shape. I'm going to play defense even though I may be hobbled. I'm going to put in maximum effort, and that's going to lift the rest of the team. So my hope is that he takes a lesson from this NBA Finals and applies it to next season in his career moving forward. But you and I were talking about yesterday how Jason Kidd has to step up and have this conversation with Luka, and it sounds like he has, and I'm glad to see that.
You know, it really is something to kind of watch an evolution of a star player in the NBA.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you watch the evolution of Kobe Bryant from kind of where he was to where he kind of ended up. Now, again, in his situation, he was literally trying to shadow everything Michael Jordan did. Along the way, which is fine. I mean, if you're going to emulate the greatest of all time, you might as well, do it that way. And I have no issues with Kobe Bryant, the basketball player, Kobe Bryant's work ethic or anything of the sort. But Kobe Bryant had his struggles, too. Now, Kobe Bryant's struggles that he had was with a teammate. And they couldn't get on the same page between him and Shaquille O'Neal. And that Phil Jackson book I read, Phil goes after Kobe, Shaq goes after Kobe. It was the most anti-Kobe book you've ever read in your life. But Having said that, eventually he comes out on the other side, understands it better after Phil Jackson has gone and Shaq has gone, and he's left with Pau Gasol to try and figure out how he's going to win a championship with him. And how do you become a better teammate? And how do you will others around you to play at a higher level, which he did with Pau Gasol? And then obviously that relationship grew to be gigantic, and he learned how to be more of maybe a team player than maybe he was back in the day. Michael Jordan, when he was coming up with the Bulls, they weren't winning originally when that whole thing started. That whole thing didn't start until Scottie Pippen came along. And then Doug Collins could only get him so far as a head coach. And then Phil Jackson, with all of his psychology, is kind of what helped them turn the corner and hiring Tex Winter to be the X's and O's guy. So that triangle offense is kind of what pushed them, you know, over the top at the end of the day. So everybody kind of had their own moments where it kind of changed the trajectory of their careers or got them to that next level. And I don't know what that's going to be for Luka. I feel like Luka is kind of at one level right now. And if you were going to pick a mentor for Luka, it wasn't going to be Kyrie Irving. Having said that, I'm not sure what happened this year, as we talked about yesterday, but Kyrie seems to have become a lot more normal. So maybe the next play, if you don't want to sit Luka, maybe the next play is you huddle up with Kyrie. And there's some type of intervention where it's Luka, it's Kyrie, it's Jason Kidd, maybe the Slovenian head coach, I don't know, whoever is close to Luka. And you sit down and go, dude, enough. This has to stop. We cannot continue to go down this road. You're a great player, but you are hurting yourself and you're hurting the team, literally, in games if things aren't going to change. You look at this NBA Finals game tonight. Can't imagine Porzingis is playing. I haven't seen anything that says he is. You need Luka and Kyrie to have superstar-like performances. They both got to score, what, 30, 35, Connor, probably at the end of the day, in order for Dallas to win a game tonight. You cannot have Luka fouling out with 5 minutes to go in the game or 4 minutes to go in the game again. We'll find out. We'll see how it goes tonight. Dallas and Boston. I'm going to take Boston to end this thing in Dallas, Connor. What about you?
I'm probably taking Boston, too. Until the Mavericks show me signs of life, I've got to take Boston.
Yeah, I think it's over tonight. Coming up next, our guy, Connor Dunning, with a very special tribute next here on The Gabe Kuhn Show.